that's been the challenge, I think. And that's the challenge for a lot of homeschooling families that are doing an unstructured kind of program.
Welcome to Radio Free School.
It's for unschoolers, we have this problem. We don't want to direct the kids. We don't want to force them to do things. But at the same time, we have to find ways of drawing them in that are natural, but aren't just leaving them to totally their own devices. When the kids get together, the first thing that they want to do is, oh, wow, we've got this opportunity. We've got all these kids. Let's have lots of fun physical play. And it's really hard to get them to focus on a particular activity. So to find a way that isn't structured or isn't telling them what they have to do, but pulling them into activities with adults or with other kids that provide more stimulation than just running around doing cool moves and like hide and seek and that kind of thing. It would be, that's been the challenge, I think, and that's the challenge for a lot of homeschooling families that are doing an unstructured kind of program. Well, that isn't a program. To have the kids come to something knowing that there is going to be a focus and the focus is going to be this, and it can evolve in all kinds of different ways, but we're going to start from that focus. We're not going to start from coming in and go do whatever you want, and if something happens, it happens. You start with, okay, we're going to focus on this today and we can take this anywhere. I think kids want to be involved in things that when they see that adults are interested in it as well, they see it as something having more value to them, and they are naturally wanting to be more a part of it than if it's just something that they know is prescribed for them to keep them busy or active or what have you, but they see much more of a value in it when it's something that really interests their parents as well. It's a question of degrees, of how much should you push them and when should you push them, and there's a lot of things like that that I know, not just in schooling issues, but in parenting issues, I suppose. When you talk about the whole idea of the non-coercive parenting, right, which is really challenging for a lot of people, because it's like, yes, I'd like to, you know, to have this kind of non-coercive kind of environment and all of the rewards in the relationship with the child that that can bring, but at the same time, he's going to do this at this time when this needs to be done, you know, and it's very hard to find a balance between, I think a lot of it is respect for other people's desires and space and what they want to do as well, and not giving the kids, well, okay, your wishes and desires are going to determine how our family operates. I mean, but it's a very fine line. It's very hard to know when it's appropriate to push and when it's appropriate to lay off of them. What do you think, Sean? What kinds of things are there that you wish I would give you more encouragement to do? And what kind of encouragement do you think would be helpful?
I think more encouragement, like, overall. Just for... just because I think, like, I'm a little different from everybody else, and sometimes when everybody's, like... I definitely don't feel good when everybody's testing me.
When other
kids...
I say
I'm homeschooled, and they say, Yeah, right, and they start testing me, and I really don't like that, and I wish I knew the answers of all the questions.
When you say you're homeschooled, right away they think that you're different, and they want to test you. They say, well, you can't possibly know anything, because if you haven't learned it in this environment, you can't possibly know anything. And their concern for you a lot of times is that you'll never get a job, right?
Right.
Yeah.
It's not a deep-down concern.
No, but they say.
No, they don't really care.
But what I want to know is, do you really think it's true that you don't know as much as them, or do you just get that feeling because they give you that message? Like when you're at Scouts, say, with the other boys that go to school, and you're talking about different things, do you feel like those boys know a lot more than you do?
No.
What's your impression?
Well, I just think that maybe they do know a little more than me. But I just try to say what I know, and I try harder than like I would around other friends that are homeschooled to act smarter. And a lot of times now I don't even tell people that I'm homeschooled.
Because all of a sudden.
Because you don't want to do math questions.
Yeah.
Because you know they're gonna say, really? What's 10 times 10? Right.
Yeah. The pressure starts.
I find that. On the days that it's possible, which a lot of days it's not possible because we have too many activities or something happens and we have to abandon anything that we have any idea of doing, but I find that it is good to have the kids take a time in their day, whether they're doing math or reading or Spanish, which the kids are doing now, to bring their attention to something, to focus on something that they are going to do. And they can choose. I mean, yesterday Sean chose what kind of math he felt like doing or what kinds of questions or what issues in math he wanted to work on. And he could choose that. Or he could choose to do something else. But, you know, lots of choices. But I think for us it works well to have them occasionally have to come to the table in a quiet environment and work on something. Because sometimes that works well, and it is that little push or that little encouragement that they need to... I mean, how did you feel after you did all those fractions yesterday? You were really excited that you figured that out.
Well, I knew how to do fractions.
No, but the addition of those ones. And
well,
the,
yeah,
the new...
I just figured out how to do like a new kind of math, and actually it turned out really good for me because I was really good at it.
Yeah. So you're glad that I gave you the little push to get started doing it?
Right.
But at the time that I was giving you the little push, were you glad I was giving you the little push?
It didn't feel like I was under pressure or anything, but I felt better when I was on my own and I knew I was doing it by myself,
mm-hmm.
without like any help or being forced at all. Like, I know I'm not forced, but like helped,
mm-hmm.
to be made to do it. Not made necessarily. I can't remember. But basically.
The learning and drawing the kids in and trying to encourage learning by example or by involvement, I think is great. If you're using a particular discipline or a tool or a trick yourself, and the kids show interest, they will naturally just pay attention to what you're doing. And if they see a causal sort of relationship between math and figuring something out or science, if they see that relationship themselves, it really gels. But then there's the other side of that one, whereby you're doing something and all of a sudden you start to get that sort of preachy, pedantic, teachy kind of voice. Oh, and children, did you notice that?
And you
by
see
doing
the
this, I'm used to
the wall comes up,
and they look at you like it was fun up until now. You know,
yeah.
All of a sudden now it's like
you're wrecking it.
They see that.
If it's not asking too much for our information, just for an illustration, tell how you intend to run the nation.
These are the laws of my administration. No one's allowed to smoke or tell a dirty joke, and whistling is forbidden.
We're not allowed to tell a dirty joke. There will be no gun.
If chewing gum is chewed, the chewer is pursued, and in the who's cow hidden.
If we do the two, we'll be pursued.
If any form of pleasure is exhibited,
report to me and it will be prohibited. I'll put my foot down, so shall it be. This is the land of the free. The last man nearly ruined this place. He didn't know what to do with it. If you think this country's bad off, now just wait till I get through with it. The country's taxes must be fixed, and I know what to do with it. If you think you're paying too much, now just wait till I get through with it. I will not stand for anything that's crooked or unfair. I'm strictly on the up and up, so everyone beware. If anyone's caught taking graft, and I don't get my share, we stand them up against the wall, and up goes the weasel.
You are listening to Radio Free School on CFMU.
In a way, I've been dissociating ourselves from the different homeschooling groups that we've normally done a lot of activities with. And the kids have gone into some more traditional programs. They're in a music band program with other schooled kids. I think I was just finding that the focus of the groups being homeschooling was somewhat limiting in certain ways, and it was kind of setting things more apart from the rest of the community. So, well, it was the focus. The focus being we are homeschoolers, or we are unschoolers, or we are this type of person, and now this premise is going to dictate the way we do this or how we do this or whatever. And that's not necessarily a good enough reason to be associated or connected with those particular people. And perhaps there are other people who don't necessarily share those same premises that you can interact with and create community with as well. I think I was starting to feel that it was a little limiting in that sense and a little exclusive. And maybe there's another way of putting together people with shared interests or whatnot that it isn't based on that sort of set of we are homeschoolers or we are organic food eaters or we are, you know, any of these definitions that communities created out of. I think that a lot of those things can be part of it, but maybe not when it's the basis of that it makes it a little limiting. The whole idea that we're trying to avoid, that learning and education can only take place within this environment under this set of circumstances. And I mean, we're trying to work with the idea that it's something that takes place all the time in everything and for your whole life, not just for the kids, but for the parents as well. So it can create that kind of separation that we're really trying to have everything be integrated into our lives. And you know, back to what we were talking about before about the time constraints that are put on kids and it prohibits things from developing naturally. I remember when Sean and Devin, they went to school, Devin went in kindergarten, Sean went in grade one. When we first moved here, they had a whole bunch of Play-Doh and they decided they were going to do a store. So they made all of the things for it was a restaurant, a breakfast restaurant. Made all the things for it. They posted a menu on the blackboard, which, I mean, they could barely print the words, but they somehow got the idea across. And then they made money. So they made all this stuff, and then I was purchasing things from them. I was working on another project, but they'd come over and say, what do you want for breakfast? They'd take my order, they'd bring me the food, they'd make the change, they'd do this. And it took hours, probably 3-4 hours, before they had completely exhausted all the opportunities that this restaurant provided them. And then at that point, Sean said, you know, last year when we got to do Play-Doh at school, we only had 15 minutes. You couldn't really do anything in 15 minutes. And sometimes maybe they'd start something and in 2 minutes, they're bored of it. They don't want to do it. You know, they might get the Play-Doh out and say, this is not a fun game. We don't want to do this. They put it away. And they're free to do that too. So, which they wouldn't be in, you know, another sort of environment.
When Sean was in senior kindergarten grade one, he got his report card. And he's always been very visually active, and he really enjoys doing arts and crafts and that sort of thing. Well, the teacher wrote in his report card, Sean really seems to enjoy drawing and painting, so we're going to make him do sculpting. You know, the imposition of sculpting now is like, well, we know how much you love that, leave it, do some sculpting?
Well, it's because the way that they want to have things set up so that the kids can be mediocre at everything, almost, rather than taking the things that they are really good at, that they really enjoy, and letting those things develop to the fullest, and then seeing where they move into. Maybe he'd be great at painting, and then that could lead into sculpting, or that could lead into other things that he wanted to do. But because they have this mandate, really, to have the kids be okay at everything, they can't pursue these individual interests that would then lead to other things and keep the real enjoyment of learning as part of it. You know, I think that sometimes can be what's lacking in that way of looking at things.
And it's just the nature of the beast. Not to call school a beast per se, but just the fact that you have one teacher trying to manage a couple dozen or more children to pay attention to each kid, it's too much to ask a person who's working under those kinds of constraints of their own in a setting where they have performance issues of their own. They have to perform to bring their kids up to a
more
level
teachers.
To satisfy the needs of the curriculum. A curriculum is really, like Monique says, just a middling and a muddling of learning that will justify the institution existing and the funding that goes into it and all the socio-political and all this sort of stuff that's involved in schools. They have to show that they're doing something for the money that they're spending. They really do. They have to perform and they have to satisfy the parents that they are doing a job. And as long as you're prepared to allow them to do that and accept curriculum as the performance criteria of how they're doing their job.
I think it's to satisfy the government, though. I don't even really think that the parent is not even like a customer. I think the parent and what they you know, if they're satisfied or dissatisfied, it doesn't really come into play. I think it's more just, does the government feel that it's perpetuating whatever it has decided that it needs to cover?
I guess so. And I guess the only question I pose is how much the government really cares about what its taxpayers say or how they feel they're performing.
One thing that I would like to talk about, because I think it's a really difficult issue for a lot of parents who've decided to take their kids out of school or are homeschooling right from the start, and that is the again, going back to the time and these set times that things are supposed to happen with kids, and that is when they decide they're ready to learn to read. And that has been a really difficult thing, I think, for a lot of parents that I've spoken to. Mm-hmm. And that's the boys deciding that they're not going to read until they're, say, 9 or 10.
Or 11 or 12, or whatever age.
And it can be a really stressful thing. I know when Sean came out of grade 1, it was because he was getting a lot of pressure that now was the time to learn his, you know, reading and his alphabet, and it was going to be learned in this structured way. And he just rejected that learning and basically started shutting down to the point where he wasn't even really interested in bedtime stories or anything to do with books. And it was very sad seeing that happen, because what he was learning was that there was something that was inadequate about him. He wasn't learning to read, certainly. So at that point, we left it completely. I didn't encourage him. We didn't encourage him at all to read. Now, it wasn't until he was 10 that he learned to read. And of course, his younger sister, who's a year and a half, almost 2 years younger, learned to read much earlier than he did. He struggled with it for years. And then all of a sudden, it was like one day he couldn't read, and then the next day, it was like something unlocked in his mind, and he could read. And now, you know, he missed those 4 years of reading, which would have been a very big concern to the school system, that he had missed that opportunity because he wasn't
at such a level.
Right, and he wasn't able to learn, you know, anything else that was based on reading as a way of learning it until he was 10. But now that he's 12 and he's out and amongst other 12-year-old boys and girls, his reading is the same, if not better. Yeah. Than theirs. And when he reads, you can tell he understands what he's reading, and you know, and so in reality, it hasn't made any difference, those 4 years of not...
No, that's what I always hear with homeschoolers.
Yeah. They
hopscotch right over and land where their emotional maturity or their...
At the time that they're ready,
yeah.
What did you learn in school today, dear little boy of mine? What did you learn in school today, dear little boy of mine? I learned that Washington never told a lie. I learned that soldiers seldom die. I learned that everybody's free. And that's what the teacher said to me. And that's what I learned in school today. That's what I learned in school. What did you learn in school today, dear little boy of mine? What did you learn in school today, dear little boy of mine? I learned that policemen are my friends. I learned that justice never ends. I learned that murderers die for the crimes, even if we make a mistake sometimes. And that's what I learned in school today. That's what I learned in school. What did you learn in school today, dear little boy of mine? What did you learn in school today, dear little boy of mine? I learned our government must be strong. It's always right and never wrong. Our leaders are the finest men, and we elect them again and again. And that's what I learned in school today. That's what I learned in school. What did you learn in school today, dear little boy of mine? What did you learn in school today, dear little boy of mine? I learned that war is not so bad. I learned about the great ones we have had. We fought in Germany and in France, and someday I might get my chance. And that's what I learned in school today. That's what I learned in school.
You are listening to Radio Free School.
Brothers Lionheart. Well, it's a really good book. And people, I don't know why not many people know about it. The author who wrote Pippi and Calson on the Roof as well, and Ronia the Robber's Daughter, but this is the best one, I think. And her name's Astrid Lindgren. She just died last year. It's a big adventure, just like Lord of the Rings is. It's like sort of a giant adventure. It's a huge adventure. And you're like traveling armies. It's about two brothers, Carl Lionheart, and the other is Jonathan Lionheart. Jonathan used to call Carl Rusky before they went to this other world. Rusky was gonna die, and there was a fire, and then Jonathan rushed through the flames to save his brother Rusky, though he was gonna die anyway. He just went and rushed through the flames, but by the time he reached Count Rusky, then the staircase turned into flames, so he jumped out of the window with Rusky on his back, and he died first. then Rusty dies, and they both go to Nunjiala and they meet each other again. Nunjiala is another world all the way from stars. When you die, then you go there, apparently, in this story, and then you're alive there, and no, you're not sick anymore or anything. So Katla is the monster, she's a female dragon. She fell asleep in ancient times in Katla Carvin. And then one terrible morning she woke up and then she ate all in her path. Tanjil, he's an evil guy. Well, he blew his war horn, which called up soldiers to help him. And then Katla came crawling to him like a dog. And from that day, she had served him because she was scared of his war horn.
Can you tell me a bit more about Tanjil and what was he doing around here anyway?
Well, he wanted to have all Nunjiala for himself. He's a very evil lord. Jonathan and Carl went to free Orva from Katla Carvin because when they decided the day of his life, the end of his life, then they bring the people to Katla and then Katla eats them. Then they rescued him, but it was like they nearly got caught themselves as well because they were in Katla Carvin and hacked him at the cage because they put the people in cages. And tie them up and everything. Jonathan got licked by Katla's flames, and then in the very end of the book, they go to Nunjiala.
Myself in paper. I'm gonna daub myself with glue. Stick some stamps on the top of my head. I'm gonna mail myself to you.
contact Radio Free School at grassroots@hwcn.org or mail P.O. Box 19, 1280 Main Street West, Hamilton, Ontario, Canada, L8S1CO.